Yeah, welcome to the Niger Filmmaker, a podcast about Nigerian filmmakers, their films, and how we can build a diverse and functional industry. I'm your host, Sele Gott. On this episode, my guest is Ebuka Njoku. He's the writer and director of Yahoo Plus. Yahoo Plus became a fan favorite at festivals, earning it a cinema release and streaming deal. We talk about creating film, his new film Uno, and the power of storytelling. If you're a new listener, you're welcome and I hope you enjoy. Hi, Ebuka. You're welcome to the Niger Filmmaker.
Hi, Sele. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Can you introduce yourself?
Well, I'm Ebuka Njoku. I'm a Nigerian filmmaker. I believe in the concept of changing the world one shot at a time. I think that's basically it, yeah. My first feature on Yahoo Plus was in the cinema for a couple of weeks, and then it's currently showing on Netflix. So my second feature, Uno, the F in Family, we just rounded up post-production. So we are currently making negotiations for distributions.
Well done on all the hard work.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah. All right, so before we kind of get into your background, you know, I think both of us share this, would I say, mission of changing the world, a story at a time. How powerful do you think stories are that you think it can actually change the world?
I mean, stories are storytelling is one of the strongest elements on earth. I mean, because basically everything in the world is storytelling. You know, on social media, when you come on social media, what you are seeing are people's stories. When you go out there to make a living, you have to tell your story to make a living, either to your clients or to your boss or to your employee or, you know, but basically life is basically about communication, and communication is storytelling. So it's quite an essential part of life. I mean, you can use it to build a city, you can use it to tear a city down. That's how powerful it is.
Okay. Can you tell us about your early days, you know, watching movies and hearing stories?
Well, I had my own share of my grandpa telling us stories of his hunting days and his days of traveling to different parts of the country. I had my own moments of going from one neighbor's window to the other, watching films with my fellow kids, you know, while I was growing up in a lower class neighborhood, you know. I had my own fair share of reading up lantern literature, you know, when I was in primary school. And then, of course, watching American films, music videos, and I also had my own share of, you know, that moment when you go on break and everybody's sharing stories of different things that could be from something you experienced during the weekend to, you know, something, a cool film that you watched or something out of your imagination. So I've always had this connection to stories. I could still remember when I was a kid and I saw Titanic. With a couple of, I was about 8, 10 or there. I was about 8 or thereabout, and every other person in the room were teenagers. You know, my elder sister, the guy that was my landlord's household. Then at the point, I noticed that everywhere in the room, you know, like went quiet. They were all struggling with their tears, and I found myself also struggling with tears. So I think that was one of my earliest deep connection with films. It also happened with Ijele, you know, like the fantasy element of the story was the romance angle and Genevieve's delivery, you know. It's, you know, like I've always been, I think, stupefied. Like there's always been this connection I've always had with stories.
Yeah.
You know, as far as I can remember.
Okay, I remember I read somewhere that you watch a mixture of Nollywood, Hollywood, Bollywood, and Chinese films. So how was that for you? What did you get from films, like from different countries?
I mean, while I was growing up, it wasn't actually a matter of choice. You know, so it wasn't like I intentionally was watching, you know, films from different parts of the world. It's just that, okay, at home, my parents would normally get Nigerian films, you know. I had a neighbor who was more interested in, okay, the guy was more interested in Chinese films, but his his girlfriend of then was more interested in Indian films, you know.
Yeah.
Then I had my my landlord's listed house of that time that was more into American films and Nigerian films too, you know, and a couple of other, you know. So it wasn't like intentional, but what that did for me was when I started telling stories, it made me realize that if a Nigerian kid like me could grow up watching Indian films with little or no subtitles and still get it.
Yeah.
You know, that means any story I tell can actually travel the world. You know, it's yeah, exactly. So, because, and he also kind of like made me understand universality better. So when I tell stories, I look for elements that people from any part of the world connect to. You know, just the way I connected to films from every other part of the world. So yeah, I think that.
Okay, so you grew up watching these films. I think when you were eventually a teenager, you started writing. Is that true?
Yeah. So I actually started writing at that was around 13.
Mm.
So there were a couple of cool books we read when we were reading in preparation for junior year. You know, so I can't remember what was happening, but there was this argument about if I could write, like if I could write, you know, and I was like, you know, just to beat the argument, I stayed up for days writing one. So I think that we had just finished writing our exams. So, you know, that period between, because it was a boarding house, between the end of the exams and you guys going home.
Yes.
You know, there are no classes. You are just in the hostel from morning till night, you know. So before we could get our exams, I had already completed a short novel. So from there, I later wrote more, but then it was, I think when I was about 15, 16, I read The Arrow of God.
Mm.
So it dawned on me that, man, like, because the level of excellence Chinua Achebe, you know, is used in executing the work, you know, maybe start, you know, asking myself some questions like, could I ever be this great at this? You know, and I wasn't sure anymore. So, and as at that period, I discovered poetry and I started reading Shakespeare. So I found myself doing more of, I gradually started doing more of poetry and then plays, you know. Then when I got into uni, I joined the writing community. So one of the days, a classmate of, so in the writing community, you submit your short plays and stuff, and they'll post it on, we had two faculty boards. So a couple of my classmates will read my short plays, they're like, ah, cool. So one of my classmates had a training on cinematography and editing. I was like, okay, since you can write, why not write something that you used to like experiment to know if I'm catching up on this thing that I'm learning?
Yeah.
So I wrote the script. From there, we started making films together, basically.
So how was that first film that you guys made? How did it come out?
Of course, it's not something I'll be proud to share anyone, but it's
this was in university, yeah?
Yeah. I was like 18. Yeah, I was 18 when we made that, you know. Okay. So even a year later, I directed my first shot, like what would be my first shot film. I could still remember the title, Picnic to Hell. Yeah, but the first one we did, like, I didn't direct it, I just wrote it. That one was just a day.
Yeah.
So it was someone died in the hostel, and there was this... So within just a day, they discovered who killed the person. Yeah.
Okay.
So second one, the one that I directed, was Picnic to Hell, about a group of students that, you know, goes for a picnic in one building like that, and gradually one of them start happening, dying and all of that and all. So we made about three, four shots that I'm not sure we are interested in showing anybody. You know, you know, just, you know, kids who are interested in filmmaking, just making films and having fun.
What did you learn from those short films that you made?
I mean, it was, because the thing about making those shorts was I made them with my friends. So it meant that every time we were together, we were discussing films.
Yeah.
I could remember back in those days, we'd sit up in the library dissecting Clarence Peters' shorts, or Steven Spielberg's shorts too, you know. And basically, we are just hanging out, you know, analyzing films, music videos, literature, and every other thing in between, you know. So it also made it easy for me to, like, get a sense of style on time, you know, because we needed to be different. So we are always pushing each other to try something different. But we are also pushing each other to, like, discover each other better, you know. So now, one of those guys I used to make those films with was a cinematographer and a co-producer in UNO. You know, the other one did the post-production. Like, his company did the post-production, and then he also is also one of the associate producers of the project. So I'm still hanging on with my day one niggas, basically. You know. So, and it's easy for us to work together at the pace we can, you know, at the capacity that we can, because we built the relationship over years of, you know, working together. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You mentioned, you know, finding your voice early on, because you dabbled in a lot of shots. So would you say, like, you know, the kind of films you want to, you know, be putting out there?
Yes, of course. I mean, even before I made my first feature, I think I knew the kind of filmmaker I wanted to.
Okay.
I'm studying a couple of people, so I can't really say this particular person, but the person's closest to what I want to achieve through films are George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, Tyler Perry in terms of producing, and then Amaki Igwe in terms of understanding what makes Nigerian tick, like what makes Nigerians tick in terms of storytelling, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, also Amaki Igwe also has this this structure of you know, training people, you know, over time. That If you've been to enough Nigerian TV scripts conference, you notice that even to date, most of Nigerian TV is still built around the Amaki Igwe storytelling structure. As that he gets, because of years of her influence, you know, in the culture. So personally, I find myself in Nigeria, you know, a country that is still struggling from the effect of colonialism, poverty, you know, low standard education, and all of that. So, I intentionally find a way to, like, you know, chip in some of these things in my film, in as much as, and I also try to not promote, celebrate Nigerian culture as much as possible. Like, each time I have conversations about proper assets with my production designer, we often talk about how we are going to change in concept of the way people do their interior decor through our films. You know, so, and in my dialogue, I chip in things about the excellence of, you know, in the way people tap and wine in Enugu, you know, and, you know, stuff like that, because I in as much as I want to express the negative side of things as a country, I also, I feel my film should also serve as a motivator, you know, that we could actually be our best over time.
Yeah.
You know, and also, I now also try to highlight the societal, you know, issues like in Ono, there's a part where people talk about war, religion, and, you know, a couple of other things, you know. I also draw a lot of inspiration from my own personal life, you know. So most of my characters are developed after people I know or people I've met before, you know, people, real life people actually, yeah. I hardly create characters I've had of them there.
Okay. And I guess that makes them like really relatable.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Okay, so you mentioned, you know, like a lot of Nigerian TV these days, you know, it's kind of built around how Amaka Egwe, you know, told stories. Can you tell us some of those things that Amaka Egwe made popular in terms of the structure of telling Nigerian stories?
Okay. I mean, the whole style of Nigerian TV drama, even the template that I feel most African magic shows still use to tomorrow, are still, so basically, you see a big family with lots of secrets, you know, and imbalance in terms of either the father has a child somewhere or the mother had a husband before and all of that, you know, and this interior, internal struggle for wealth or for who gets a higher share of the family wealth. You know, and this, you know, struggle with the family business. So basically, that's checkmate.
Yeah.
You see that there are 20 Nigerian family drama, 15 of them are like that. So what the only difference is that they find a different industry for each of the shows.
Yeah.
Still basically the same about Amaka Egwe template. And it's easy to like not say it, you know, but if you also interact with some of the writers, they'll tell you, like, you hear every now and then them mention, give you one or two Amaka Egwe quotes, you know, start making sense to you where these things are coming from, you know. In as much as I celebrate her excellence, you know, but I still feel there's a need for someone to, you know, break off that and, you know, bring in something new, you know, like it style altogether, you know. Two persons that over time I've seen them do something different. This would be like some name calling thing, but yeah, this lady that created the Skinny Girls in Transit, Dami. Then, of course, because she bettered what now changed the ecosystem of Nigerian web series.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, of course, Funke Akindele, who now brought in the her own flavor from the comedy angle, you know. So, but apart from those two, basically, you know, the same thing over and over.
Yeah. So let's go back a bit, back to when you were in university. You studied theater at University of Nigeria. How did that kind of influence how you direct movies these days?
You know, the funny thing is, okay, I don't know how to explain it so that it makes sense, but yeah. But I'm actually a university dropout.
Okay.
I left school when I was in third year. So in as much as I studied theater art, I can't really say I'm a fan of the theater.
Mm.
You know, because it got to a point where I would read Shakespeare's play and I would notice there's always a character. There are sometimes characters in plays of those eras that in between comes in and explain one or two things to you, to the audience. I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, so every now and then, you notice Shakespeare complaining of the limitation of the stage.
Yeah.
Okay, that was in a time when the stage was all they had. So at some point, especially in, I think, Henry VI or Henry V, either Henry V, 4, 5, or 6, I can't remember. So the play starts with I forgot the name of what these characters are called. So the person comes on stage, narrator, yes, ahead, and says something in the lines of, he wishes this wasn't a stage so that they could, and they had the same number of soldiers that, you know, experienced the war in real life on stage, so that we'll see the fight for real, so that they will have real blood instead of this makeup and stuff that they're showing you. So I'll read stuff like that. I'm like, if Shakespeare was born when I was born, he wouldn't be a playwright. He wouldn't be a poet. He'd be a filmmaker that probably releases an EP with swing. Like a sound, a couple of songs with the swing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but because today's version of playwriting is actually music. You know. So the host, the idea of being a state practitioner stopped making sense to me. You know, so when that happened, I started losing interest in classes and all of that. But then being a theater art student meant that I would attend rehearsals every day for the 2 years plus that I was in the department. So that means I was watching my lecturers do audition and watch them turn an average actor to, you know, someone that shocks everybody at the night of the performance. You know, that means I'd gone from watching people, you know, be mid at something and then over time get great at it. So and those things are subtle training on casting, directing, and the whole process of filmmaking. The only difference is now there's a camera in between. So it's in as much as I left theater art, I can't deny the fact that it's contributed a lot to what makes me a filmmaker. If not for any other thing, we also had this big ass library in my department that I would go, you know, read books on theater and film history and, you know, all of that. So yeah. It's really contributed a lot.
Okay. Nice. I don't know whether this was when you're in university, but I think you have a credit as the creator for Crazy Lovely Cool.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So I created the show. I noticed that you know, while we are trying to develop it, I noticed that the producer wasn't in line with the idea I had for the film, you know. So we are having lots of creative differences, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted all the bad guys to be bad guys and bad things to happen to them and the good guys to be good guys to happen to them and all of that. So, and it was, so the process was telling away from my own experience of the university and my own understanding of, you know, and what I really wanted to, you know, the depths, you know, and the intricacies I wanted to, you know, play around with, you know, for the characters and the story. So at a point I felt it was either bringing an end to the deal and the series wouldn't come to light at all, or I had to leave and let them do their own thing. So I chose to leave and let them do their own thing.
Okay. And I guess at that point, then it got made based on a different creative direction.
Yes, I mean, you guys, the day it came on Netflix, I wouldn't want to use the word depressed, but I felt sad, you know, because the show could have been a lot more. Like, if the show had gone the direction it was meant to, it wouldn't have ended with a season one.
Yeah.
We'd have probably gone into seven seasons, and it'd probably be one of the hottest Nigerian shows at the moment. But I mean, good thing is, I'm not a filmmaker, so I still have a lot of time to, you know, show what that show could have been through another show.
So
it didn't sound as if I'm just cutting, you know.
All right, so let's talk about your introduction into the industry. You worked on a couple of scripts, like short scripts, and you even won the Homvida Award for the short script competition. Can you talk about winning that award? What did it do for your career, and also your actual introduction to the industry?
Okay, that award, it was a blessing, and it was a curse somehow. Because the award was like my first introduction to Nollywood. So when I dropped out, I moved to Lagos. I stayed in a ghetto. Probably when you watch Uno, one of the characters said a little thing about, you know, my experience that covered a little bit of my experience in the ghetto. So I did odd jobs and all of that for a year plus until the opportunity came for me to enter for the award. So at the award night, I met a couple of industry people and all of that. So the reception I got that night made me feel like, oh, I'd arrived, you know. so it's only for me to over time realize that I'm all, you know, there's still a long way to go. And also, I love what Isha Ayabako did with the film. He didn't follow my script to the, like, word by word. Like, he changed a couple of things in the script. But it turned out a dope film. You know, like, I'm happy that it was changed. A director takes a piece, your script, and then turns it into something that you love, even though it's not exactly what you wrote. You get it? So I felt like, okay, this is where Nollywood works. But then every other script that I'd written for people, I would see it on screen and like, this shit doesn't make sense. So it's like, when I entered the industry, I focused on writing. I had years of writing things that when they would make it on screen to the screen, I wouldn't have the pride to like ask my guys to go and watch it. So I came, Ishaya raised the bar high, and no other filmmaker that I ever got to work with was able to like, you know, read that bar. So it felt sad, you know.
So what did he do particularly, you know, better, like in terms of, you know, improving what you wrote?
I think it's just because this thing is not that hard yet. It's basically being open to understanding the story from where it came from, and then allowing the story to pass through you, and then, you know, breathe your own sense of eye of creativity into it. If that makes sense. Unlike, you know, guessing a material and without understanding the material or where the filmmaker is coming from, without planning properly. Without, you know, having an understanding of the whole idea, you just got mixed rubbish, you know. But I feel that's what he got to feel like. You could tell when you see the short film that the filmmaker understood the idea behind it and went, gave it his all. I mean, it shouldn't be that difficult. I mean,
at this point, I'll ask you to mention three random things about yourself.
Okay. Film is just one of the many things I'm interested in. Like, I'm interested in fashion, I'm interested in design, I'm interested in music, I'm interested in more things like that. I can't even say now because it sounds like I want to do everything, but yeah.
So, and this is beyond curiosity.
Not like in the capacity that I'm doing film. You know, like in fashion, it might be more of investing and then, you know, being part of the creative, like originating the concept, not like doing this, not like I'll be doing this, so you know, doing the design myself, you know.
Yeah.
You know. So and basically every other industry that I find myself in, it's just me doing like a part of the management or the conceptualization team, not like the technical, you know. Because in as much as I want to do a lot, I understand my limitations as a human being.
Yeah.
So I'm a local boy to core. I mean, I love my Abacha, I love my Oba, I love my local food. Yeah. What's the third one? I mean, is it apparent that I'm crazy?
Probably not.
I'm actually great in maths. Like I'm great with numbers. Yeah, okay. I was one of those kids that I'll be walking on the street and be doing plus and minus and multiplication in my head when I was doing. So yeah.
Yeah. There was a time where you took a break from the industry. Was it you quitting or you just needed to, you know, try other things?
It was actually me quitting.
And what led to that decision?
Part of the Crazy Love Cool thing. And then I noticed that it was just, I was having this experience with producers where it felt like all of them wanted the same thing. And it was the same thing that I was tired of seeing on TV.
And what is that? What did they want?
They just want the average story. You know, something that you see because they feel it's what sells, you know. And so I found myself always having that argument, and then I'll find myself in the one where the vexed people that year was. So being a writers conference here, or before the producer comes, we the writers like, you know, coming out with great ideas and setting and everything will be going well. Then the producer comes and like, okay, what have you guys done? And he or she will be told, okay, this. And she'll be like, nah, this doesn't work. And everybody would go quiet. And I'll be like, you know, me, where the idea, where would they share the ideas and thought the vibe in the room, like, want to like defend, you know, and everybody, I'll just be left to like, look like a bad guy. You know, it happened more than one location. So at the point, I'll find myself in the writer's conference and not be saying more because I didn't want to like look like a bad guy. So basically, writing wasn't working for me anymore. So I felt that maybe the industry wouldn't work for me anymore. So I left and decided to try other things. But then I still see myself trying to like write. At the point, I decided to work in a bar. So when I started working in a bar, I would find myself having conversations with people working in other industries. And I'll notice that just like I'll go to a scriptwriters conference and I hear writers complaining about the way producers treat them and the way directors and all of that treat them. I also hear talking about the way their CEOs treat them. I hear floor receptionists talking about the way, you know, like every industry you go to, you notice like there's no industry where everybody feels happy about every other person, you know. So it dawned on me that I didn't have enough reason to live in Nollywood, you know. I mean, everybody doesn't like me to like me, you know. But if I really wanted to tell my story, I should find a way and I shouldn't like chicken out. And my excuse for not chasing my dream shouldn't be because one or two producers didn't like my star, or, you know, it wouldn't make sense to my children. So I had to now change my strategy, you know. So I came back, I started taking writing books again, you know, started studying producing, started reading up on management, branding, and, you know, the business side of filming, basically.
And when you I guess understanding the business of writing and the other parts of filmmaking, what stuck out to you? What do people often miss, when they try to get into this industry and do stuff?
Recently, what I noticed that people miss is we, just like everything in life, people focus more on the less important things than the important things. People focus more on marketing than on branding.
Mm.
People focus more on getting the hottest actors than on developing the right story developing their story well. People focus more on making, people focus more on trying to do what has been done than asking, okay, what's the new frontier? What are the new frontiers? And recently people focus more on doing high budget thing than managing their resources well to achieve better. To us now, if you are not doing a 50 million naira film, you are not a serious filmmaker. But for an industry that needs more resources, the question should be, how can we actually achieve more with less, instead of always shouting budget. On the other side of it, we understand that because Nigeria is a poor country, our economy is still struggling, we don't have as much support in terms of resources as our foreign counterparts. So it now makes us scared of taking more risk. And that makes it harder for us to grow. But once it comes to that understanding, you realize that should actually make you take more risk because we have less to lose.
Yeah.
We've been here, not good. How many years has Nollywood been in existence to begin with? So I still understand the fact that time also has to play its own part. You don't expect you to become the best all of a sudden. We still need to take time in developing things. Hollywood, Americans have had Hollywood for over 100 years. And they also, the filmmaking aspects, they also contribute in developing the cameras and the studio structures and all of that. Unlike us, that we came at a point where, we started our cinema culture in Nigeria started at a point where it was beginning to die in other parts of the world, so to say. It's an industry. I'm very, how do I put it, optimistic about, because I interact with younger filmmakers, I read their script, and I see the potentials in Nollywood, and I can't wait for that time to come where things are better and we make better moves.
Yeah. And for these young filmmakers with promising scripts and a lot of potential, how would you advise them to, get into the industry and make the most of the opportunities?
I feel the best thing for upcoming Nigerian filmmakers is to have to follow the Afrobeat imprints. Yeah, that is finding your audience, being as local as possible, but then making things of international standard, and then also finding a way to grow your own management and marketing team. Because the good thing right now is, my film Yahoo Plus should probably be the cheapest film on Netflix at the moment. So 10 years ago, I'm not sure it would have been feasible for a Nigerian filmmaker to like have that for his first film, you know?
Yeah.
So we are in that time in the world where you can actually make a film with a good smartphone and it can find its way to Netflix. There are about 2-3 films on Netflix that we are shot with phone. You know, so we at that point, we are getting some of these things are easier, but the destruction in the world now makes it harder to actually get it done, you know. So it means that it also means that more people can do that thing that you feel you can do. So standing out becomes harder, you know. So, but anyone that stands out and, you know, remains headstrong would easily break in, like for the younger generation, because, like, they don't clear the bush, they just come and be remarkable and find the way around it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so can you tell us that one film that you're always happy to watch over and over again?
A couple of films that I watch more than once in a year. Mm. Like you see Pretty Woman, you see Titanic, you see Three Idiots, you see The Good Will Hunting, you see I'm beginning to forget some of them. Aaron Brockovich. You see The Graduate, like Sound of Music, of course. Then Avatar every now and then, you know.
Then
Inception. I mean, there are a couple of things that I watch every now and then. Just, oh, fuck, I even forgot this guy's... Billy Wilder. Mm. Yeah. That's really bad, you know.
Yeah.
And there's this one I'm forgetting, the one that's actually my favorite of the scenes. It doesn't sound so really bad. Love in the Afternoon. Yeah, Love in the Afternoon. So like...
Okay. Who made it?
Billy Wilder. He was one of those OG filmmakers of the 30s, 40s, and...
So what is it about these different films that give them, you know, very good rewatch value that you always kind of go back to watch them? What is it about those films?
I mean, it's sometimes there are not things I can explain. And then sometimes I think that the more I watch them, the more I see the reasons why I actually watch them.
Yeah.
You know. And sometimes I watch them for different purposes. You know. So like it took me making Uno to realize the level of sound excellence that went into Pretty Woman and The Good Will Hunting. But these are movies I've seen at least 20 times each, you know. So, but it was when we are developing, designing sound for Uno, that we have films that I had to watch again to like, okay, see what they did. And I'm like, wow. So basically, I mean, there's some psychic things that connects you to some piece of work that you just can't explain. So for Pretty Woman, it's the warmth of it.
Mm.
You know, it's not a very serious story, but it's as relatable as possible. Anybody can relate to it. And then it has some elements of humor without trying so hard. You know, and I also love how it celebrates New York.
Yeah.
Then for Titanic is the love story. For Avatar is the technological advancements, like what they did with the 3D. You know, like sometimes I just put it and watch the colors, like, you know, the beauty of the magic, of the magic, you know. For a film like Love in the Afternoon, it's just the simplicity of it. And I think simplicity is also a thing for me in art. Because I love stories that are very simple, straight to the point, not too much, you know. Then for a film like Inception, it's everything, the technical details, the storytelling, you know. And even though it's the storytelling is non-linear, the idea behind it is as simple as possible.
Yeah.
You know. And you can still feel the characters as complex as they might seem. So Yeah, lots of things basically. Sometimes I don't know, like Three Idiots is just sometimes I just watch Three Idiots just because it's a fun thing to watch.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about Yahoo Plus. How did that come about?
I mean, part of what I did when I was feeling lost in the world was I worked in a bar, you know, for a couple of months. So, and working in a bar meant that I was talking with Yahoo boys, so to say. And yeah. Every now and then, that was around 2019. That was around the period of where guys would use girls' pants and bra, you know, for money rituals and all, you know. So,
yeah.
And anytime the conversation came up that time, there was always somebody trying to say that it was that the whole plus thing wasn't what people said it was. So basically, there were on the plus 10. So the more questions I asked, the more it felt like there was no, the more it dawned on me that there was this spiritual way of making money. So I found it surprising because I'll try to argue with some other people, and so I found it surprising that we've been making things for decades and nobody has ever thought of, you know, putting that on screen, you know. Then, so yeah, so I wrote the script and all, and then by then there's this guy I've been speaking with about EPing my film for like about 2-3 years. So finally, he saw the idea and felt like, okay, it's something he wants to invest in, and we did it.
In terms of execution, what were the different kind of aspects that influence your choices in how, you know, you wrote some of the scenes and how you shot it and all that?
I mean, it's so first was I saw this film 1917.
Yeah.
You know, that the cinematography was made to seem like it's one seamless shot.
Yeah.
You know? Then because I knew for my first film, I had to conquer a market. I had to define my audience. Then I knew that I didn't have enough money for marketing. So film festivals was going to be my number one way of marketing the film. So it also had to be a film that film festivals accept.
Yeah.
So. For cinematography, it was basically 1917. And I mean, one of my favorite filmmakers ever is Spielberg. And Spielberg and his cinematographer, Janusz Kaminski, they play around one takes. They play with one takes like a lot. So
yeah.
I've always been fascinated by one takes, you know. So, but then, beyond style and everything, Yahoo Plus was meant to be a nightmare. You know, the idea of Yahoo Plus is what's the worst that can happen when two guys that want to do Yahoo Plus meet two runs girl on a night out. You get, so that's, you know. So basically, for you to capture that story, it has to be, the story has to feel dark, you know, and it has to have a naturalistic feel. So the sense of one take is for you not to ever, you know, feel like it was short. So the idea was for you to feel like, okay, this was happening and someone was lucky enough to capture them with the camera.
You know, Nollywood, over the years, the industry has been growing in leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. There are things that have improved monumentally, and there are things that are still, you know, same old problems. For you, what is that one thing that, you know, as an industry should focus on, you know, improving?
I feel it's storytelling diversity.
Yeah.
You know, in the sense that I feel we are too young, an industry to be making rules about what the audience wants to see and what they don't want to see.
Yeah.
You know, or making rules about things that can travel and things that cannot travel. I've heard someone say something in the lines of Nigerian comedies can't travel. You know,
yeah.
But I mean, that's a huge lie. I've heard people say things in the line of Nigerians don't like horror film. But I grew up on lots of Nigerian horror film, you know, and there are crazy concepts like that all over Nollywood. Like they tell you that like the Nigerian audience don't watch intelligent films. That they're like lots of bullshit. I'm like, how did we get this people?
Yeah.
You know, because it's not like somebody goes around keeping fixing my audience some forms to feel, or you know, like I'm not sure anybody has actually gone to carry out the research, you know, about. So what happens is a film succeeds, everybody feels that that's the kind of film Nigerian audience wants to watch. So they start making that kind of film till Nigerian audience get tired of it and another film succeeds. People now start making films like that, you know.
Yeah.
So just like, what's the name of this film? King of Thieves succeeded stars ago. Every year, we now have to expect a Yoruba epic film. Mm. You know, and every year we have to expect a Nka Akindele and the Toyin Abraham film. You know. And it's not like they're not good. It's not like, but then we need more. We need more diversity, you know. We could have more than that, you know. So so basically, I feel distributors should take more risk with certain kind of stories, you know, and be more, how do I put it? We do what I call general marketing for film. Like there's this particular template that most Nigerian films that make it to the cinema are marketed with, you know. I mean, this year it's been dancing because Funke Akindele dance. It doesn't make sense. It works for that film, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's going to work for every other film.
Yeah.
You know, there are some things that do well with more serious promotion, like it's promotion that doesn't feel like promotion. There are films that, what's the name of this guy? Nolan puts more hype on the secrecy of the information about his film for his promotion. Like people are going crazy online looking for materials that connect them and they can't find it. That's how he promotes his film. You know? And it works for him, you know. But then in Nollywood, you are told to do what the next guy did, whether your film is this kind of film or not, you know. So, and I also feel that Nigerian filmmakers struggle with identity crisis. When you reach Mamanda, was there this year, you could tell who she is from her book.
Yeah,
you know, there's no struggle to understand her. But you watch some Nigerian filmmakers, you struggle to like, okay, where is this coming from? Like you can't even find where the story is coming from. Yeah, because the people that made it have no sense of identity. Yeah. So you see stuff like it's a lot though, but like I said, it's not really a young industry. So these are part of the problems you see in a growing industry, which over time, of course, will be taken care of naturally, because there are lots of guys putting in their blood, like doing their very best, like get things working out. Over time, it would
get better.
Yeah.
All right. Let me give you one scenario. So let's say it kind of relates to what you have just talked about, diversity. So let's say, with your own unique type of voice and how you like to, you know, tell your stories, you have your next film ready and your pre-production stage, you're trying to find a distributor to attach to it, and also like an executive producer. And at that point, they are now giving you notes on things to remove. What are you going to do in that scenario?
Well, I think one thing that, before I ever made my first film, I read a book on management and other people in entrepreneurship. And one of the advice I got from those books is to be very careful about who I get my money from.
Yeah.
So I'm very particular about who I let invest in my films, because it goes a long way to determine what you can do with your film. You know, so I can't work with an executive producer that doesn't let me do it. You know?
Yeah.
But for distributors, the good thing is you are not forced to do it. I mean, we have at least five distributors in about seven distribution distributors when it comes to cinema and Netflix in Nigeria. Yeah. So nobody is forcing you to do anything. So if it doesn't work with one distributor, nothing stops you from going with that distributor, you know, until you find what works. Then for beyond that, beyond thinking per film, is thinking per your career plan or career goals.
Yeah.
Like there's a kind of filmmaker you be, and it wouldn't make sense for you to want to be working with Nigerian distributors because of the kind of film that you make.
Yeah.
So if you feel like that, the best thing is to do what the CJ Overseas and a couple of other filmmakers are now doing, finding international platforms to help with the distribution and marketing of their film.
Yeah.
You know, because the beautiful thing about being a Nigerian filmmaker now is nobody stops you from anything.
Yeah.
You know, like in the grand scheme of things, there are no gatekeepers, like, because the industry is somehow. So the gatekeepers from this point will not be gatekeepers from another point. I don't know if you get what I'm saying. Uh-huh. So it makes it now you can do whatever you want as a filmmaker. You just have to find your way around it and make it work.
Okay. All right. So how can people keep up with more information about your new film Uno and general stuff about you?
Okay. We have a page for film on IG and other social media platforms. Just search for Uno the Epic Family. You follow us. And me personally, I'm on social media. You can just I use the Ebukan Joko Instagram handle. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Ebuka, for coming on Nigerian Filmmaker.
It's really a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We have come to the end of this episode. Remember to rate and review the podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Selegal Film, and the podcast at the Niger Film Pod to share your feedback. You can now support the podcast by visiting the website to donate. See you on the next episode. Have a good one.